missing. Rap activism, we rap, rap our vision. Bringing politics back to rap. Actions missing. Rap activism, we rap, rap our vision. You're tuned in to Apex Express. I'm Tara Darabji, kicking it with you on this Thursday night, and we're going to be talking about Voices of Our Nation, also called VONA. It's the nation's only multi-genre conference for writers of color, and it's coming to UC Berkeley later in June. So all of you listeners out there have a really amazing opportunity to catch up with some of the faculty at a benefit they're going to be doing for VONA June 30th. And to name just a few of the writers that'll be dropping wisdom, there's going to be Gina Diaz, Ruth Foreman, Stacey Ann Chin, Evelina Galan. The list just goes on and on. And we actually have Evelina Galan on the line with us tonight. Evelina was named one of the most influential Filipinas in the United States by Filipina Women's Network. She's the author of the story collection, Her Wild American Self, and the novel One Tribe. She's the recipient of numerous awards, including the 2004 Gustavus Myers Astounding Book Awards, and she's a longtime faculty member at VONA. She'll be reading at VONA's June 30th benefit in Oakland. We're also joined in studio by Melissa Ray Sippen. She's a VONA alumna, and her short story just won Glimmer Train's Fiction Award. So thank you both so much for joining us at KPFA.
Hi.
Hello, Tara.
Hey, thanks for staying up late, Evelina, and being with us.
My pleasure. If it's for VONA, I'll stay up late.
Nice. All the way out there on the East Coast. So, Evelina, let's start with you. How did you get started with VONA?
You know, a few years ago, I got a call from DM and Elmas asking me to join the faculty. It was a one-time deal, and I had for a long time had a couple of my own students of color, my writers of color here from the University of Miami, who have attended VONA, saying to me, you got to go out there and check it out. You know, you'd be perfect. You know, you'd love it. And you know, I got the call, so I went, and guess what? My students were right, as usual. It was an amazing opportunity. I started out working with residency and working one-on-one with young writers of color. So that was how I began, you know, just by doing the work and really enjoying it.
And now there's a VONA at Miami. How many times have you taught VONA?
Wow. See, I've been teaching since 2010, and if you count the Miami VONA, mm-hmm. maybe five times, maybe four or five times, in the summertime and in the winter in January for 3 days. Not only teaching the Miami workshop, but also directing it and getting everybody together.
And Melissa Ray Sippen, I want to bring you into the conversation. I actually met you at VONA back in 2011. We were both in ZZ Packer's workshop.
That's right.
Yeah. My first time
there. Lucky 13.
Yes. Amazing, transformative experience. And as a young Filipina woman writer, what has VONA done for you?
It's done many things. One of the main things, it really broke me down, especially at the Evelina. I remember my first time at Miami, she kind of was like, I know what you're doing with your story, with the Olde Panay. And that was like what I really needed to hear. And they also built me up. So VONA really taught me just to do the work and really try hard at writing and never giving up, really.
And what have been some of the challenges that you've experienced as a young female writer mm-hmm. of color?
I mean, just everything as a daily living experience. And I used to live in Charleston, South Carolina. And one of my coworkers just said something very racist to me during one of the times. So in every kind of aspect of my life, it's always a difficult in-between lifestyle as a person of color.
And how has that, like, do you write about race in your writing? Or
I do. But I just remember my times in workshop at USC when I was an undergrad. A lot of people just didn't know what to say when I would write about race. They would just put it aside, and it would just never, it was always like patted on, like, oh, that's nice, that's ethnic. And at Vona, I finally found a space where people wanted to talk about the craft and what I was doing right and what I was doing wrong. So that was great.
Taking it to that level. And Evelina, in your website, I was checking it out, reading your bio, and one of the things that you said that really struck me is you write to be heard.
Yep.
You write to be heard.
I write to be heard. Well, you know, that starts out, that comment comes from, you know, very first and foremost coming from a large family, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being the oldest daughter in a Filipina family.
Of how many?
I'm the oldest of six, and my father is the oldest of 12, and my mother is the youngest daughter of seven children. So I come from a really large family. So it comes from that very, very personal space, not political, you know, at first, but very personal, and just wanting to be heard, and wanting to tell the stories that are around me. And, I think that as I've grown and, researched the world and the stories of my own community, the Filipino-American community, and the Comfort Women stories, I realized that I've been writing the stories of women who've been traditionally silenced, that somehow their stories speak to me, and I find myself writing their stories, so I'm writing to be heard. Now I'm writing to be heard on multiple levels, you know, not just to be heard personally and privately, but to be heard as a community.
And as these unheard, censored, untold stories start to be written down, start to be spoken, start to come to people over the radio waves, the sound waves, all of those, what do you see happening, Evelina?
Well, I see a kind of an empowerment happening, you know, and not just for the sake of the writers. Of course, that's a very important part of what we do at Vona, is to support the individual writer and to give them a community platform, right? But I think that for our readers, and this is something that I actually saw with my first story collection, I would go into classrooms and at universities for Asian American Studies and Filipino American Studies, and students started speaking to me about their stories and feeling quite proud and happy to read something that's reflecting their culture, their perspective, even though most of those stories in Herwild American South are about the Midwest, Midwestern Pinay, you know, it seemed that they were echoing, that the stories were echoing and reverberating with the readers on the East Coast and the West Coast. And, you know, there, I think that what we start to see is the voice, the community voice starts to be louder and more diverse and textured, because the stories within a book open up the stories of the readers, and they start talking about their stories, and we start to see that, you know, the whole makeup of the country is not what it has always appeared to be traditionally, right?
Exactly. And I think that as the stories come out in that representation, it opens up a space for more and more people to go deeper into telling that story and getting into that intimate space.
Mm-hmm.
And what, in terms of your work, Melissa, how have you seen yourself be able to take more risks in both your experience in Vona and creating that network of writers that support you?
I guess I was just thinking about this today when I was trying to write another story of mine. I really had to look inside of my own intimate space and become unfiltered with myself to write about the things that I want to run away from. And one of the things is like my own marriage and fictionalizing it, and what's it like to be a military wife, a Pinay and a military wife. And that's been very difficult, but Vona has given me the tools to really face what I'm fearing and write about it.
I think that's one of the biggest parts of our writing, is to take that space that we're afraid of and jump into it.
Right.
And the problem with that is that you got to sit into it, you got to feel it, you got to go deep, and then you get to share it.
Mm-hmm. Totally right.
And then what happens though when we go through that process?
I mean, wonderful things. People start saying, hey, this is my story too, or hey, I wish I was able to read this somewhere, but I finally have gotten to reading, like, read it from you. And that's, like, a great feeling to have.
And I know you have a short piece for us prepared, so...
Yeah, so this is from my new short story. It's like the title of my short story collection I'm working on. It's called The Salt and the Snails. And it's pretty self-explanatory, but this is like the ending of the piece. But here we go. Then my sister appeared. Was she doing a disappearing act? She walked down the aisle, rushing past the pews. Her head hung low. She was looking at her shoes. Why was she looking at her shoes? She kept looking at her shoes. And when she finally reached the altar, the sun shone on her, as always. But this time in her white dress, she looked heavenly, like she was dead, like she was shame, like she was a snail retreated into its shell. And she kept looking at her shoes, her face downcast, her smile hidden. I started to fidget. I started moving my legs very fast, confused, and my Lola dug her nails into my thigh, stilling me. Listen, watch this. If you follow your sister at all, you too will do this. No more. She lifted the sunglasses from her face. This is just a word, maharot, but it's shame, Anganako. It's death. I looked at my Lola, still confused, and then my sister spoke. The priest had his hand on her shoulder. Her mouth opened. I'm sorry, she said over and over. I'm sorry, she cried. Her face collapsed into her hands. I am, she cried. She told the church she was wrong. For having sex. For being pregnant. She apologized for being a bad example. For being a bad leader in the church. For directing choir without remembering her morality. And then for being pregnant. Again, for being wrong. What a bad example she was. That slut, that whore, that guerrera. Marcos Guerrera. But why was Marcos sitting there quietly beside his parents? They were holding hands. They said nothing. No apology. Only Atta was talking, her face still in her hands, the priest lingering beside her. She finally sat next to Marco. He didn't let go of his parents' hands, so she sat there and looked so alone. I wanted to go up to her and give her the salt pockets I had in my pockets. I wanted to stand up and talk to the priest and tell him it wasn't my Ata's fault. I wanted to lift her white lace dress and expose her belly and pour the salt onto her skin and impress the grains, moving my hand in a wave, encircling her belly, just like how my Lola did with water on her back. I wanted to salt her skin, let the salt swim in her skin, let the baby breathe and breathe and breathe and then have the salt kill it, let the baby twitch and burn, let Atta's tears drown it, let the redness and the brownness and the whiteness mix its blood, burn Atta's cinnamon-shaded skin, everything, burn everything, until it's normal again, until the day is normal again, until everything is out, until Marco and his family's out of our house, until I stop fidgeting, until Lola stops gripping my leg like I'm that slut, that whore, that guerrera. Mahalo, maharot. The whole church wailed, maharot. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Amazing.
Thanks.
Beautiful, yeah.
How do you, Evelina, Melissa is one of your students.
Yes.
You've mentored her, you've watched her grow.
I have. How do I feel?
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm so proud. I'm so proud of you, Melissa. I mean, I remember, you know, she was sitting in my office at the University of Miami doing that Miami workshop. We were doing one-on-ones and we talked about craft. Remember that, Melissa?
I do.
And remember it like, I don't know, she had workshopped this piece and nobody talked to her about craft and it was this really powerful moment because I think that story had to do with race. And we kind of decided that maybe people didn't want to touch it. We're not really sure, but we had a conversation about craft. And I have to say, beautifully crafted piece, you know. It's really the imagery and the power and the emotion, and it's all done through craft. And I am busting proud. That's how I feel.
I can't thank you enough, Evelina.
I can't thank you enough.
That is just a piece of what happens at FONA, that focus on craft, that risk-taking, and the ability to go into those emotions and open them up and show a truth that most people want to run and hide from. So, Evelina, we have the seeds of our success coming up on Sunday, June 30th.
Absolutely.
It's going to be at Uptown Body in Fender in Oakland. There's a VIP reception and then a larger reading. Break down for us who all's going to be there.
Let's see. Let me tell you who's all going to be there. And Elmaz will be there. Hold on one second, and I'll tell you exactly. Elmaz and Juno Diaz, Stacey Ann Chin, David Mura, myself. I'm not even sure who, if I'm catching everybody, but Matt Johnson, Ruth Foreman. There will be many of us there, and you know, we're really looking forward to talking to people and to sharing, you know, our experiences and our mission. You know, the mission for VONA is really to create this incredibly special space for writers of color and to support the individual writer, to create like a community for them, a platform to work with one another, not just through workshop but through mentorship. And as you can see, that mentorship is so important. So we really are putting our hands together and working really hard and gathering all our community support to really get people to help us fund, you know, our administration, and to create space for our scholarships, to, you know, our faculty are very important to us, and many of us do donate a lot of time, so we'd like to compensate some of that, our faculty, you know, and to also secure a location for 2 weeks. You know, we're in Berkeley right now, and we used to come for 2 weeks in the summertime, and then what happened was we moved venues, and we've been paying for our facilities, so now we've consolidated to a week, and we have so many writers who want to be with us and continue the work that we've been doing. 2,000 have come through our doors. So I think that this fundraiser is really about building that community and creating a space for writers like yourselves, and also a place for writers like myself to come and be a part of something really important, and to give back and to give thanks.
And Evelina, as a writer who has made it to the other side, published, teaches, it's like, you know, you're doing it. Is there still sort of isolation in that success? And is the community as important to you now in your life?
The community is even more important to me at this stage of my career. When I was a graduate student back in the early 90s, you know, I was maybe one of two writers of color in my MFA program. And he was in a different genre than, you know, he was a poet and I was a fiction writer. And so I didn't have that community. And when I set out to write, you know, create my master's list of books to read that spoke to my work, and I was looking for Filipino American writers, the list was so short back in those days that I had to create a Filipino/Filipino-American list, right, just so I could to make it. So to be in this community with writers like Juno and Stacey Ann and Elmaz and Faith Ayeli, it's like this is my time to also feed and feel that same thing that the participants are feeling, right? And it feeds my work to be able to sit at a table and have a meal with my colleagues and to be able to discuss, you know, the literature of our community and where it's going and how it's changing the face of American contemporary literature is very, very important to someone like myself. So that's why you see faculty giving, you know, 200% when we're there at Berkeley or in Miami or wherever we're living, you know. It doesn't stop for us because it's that important.
And I know I've gone to a couple of the VONA faculty reading, and it blows my mind.
That's my most favorite reading ever. Yeah.
And, you know, I think for me, one of the moments, the first time I went, Stacey Ann was performing, and she climbed up on the podium, and she did this amazing poem and just yelled vagina at the top of her lungs.
Right.
And but it really, like, it changed the way that I was able to write about sexuality.
Right.
Because I was like, if she can get up there in front of hundreds of people and do that, then I can put this on the page.
Right.
And yeah, I wanted to check in, like, Melissa, sort of, you've been to a few of these readings. What has been one of your highlights?
Just that moment too. Stacey Ann just filled my memory, my mind. I just remember her saying coca bread, and that was vagina, and just that helped. That just helped me, like, if she can do it, I can too.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I know that that's one of the things in terms of art and artistic expression, is that when you get the artists together and you get them around the table and building and feeding and opening and growing, it takes your art in a new direction.
In a different place entirely, definitely.
And it just really allows you to look at your work in a new way, and also to take those risks that otherwise
right.
you never would. And Melissa, you read to us your story, and if people want to find more of your work, you're talking about the collection of short stories.
Right. This story I'm still trying to get published, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. But my story is coming out in Glimmer Train in issue 91 in 2014. If you want to read that story, it's called Walang Hia Brother. It's on Coeli Journal online right now.
And I wonder, isn't that the first place
yes.
story at, what was that contest for it's, Glimmer Train?
Yeah, Glimmer Train's a March Fiction Open, and Fiction Open is the contest between, like, old writers and new writers. So it's pretty big that I got to win this competition. It was very much a big surprise too.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And what's if the journal, how do you spell Coeli?
Coeli is a K-W-E-L-I journal.
K-W-E-L-I journal.
Yes.
And people can read it online. Be like, I saw it at Coeli first. And Evelina, you tell us about where people can find your work and what you're working on.
Yeah. Well, they can find my work at Coffee House Press. The first story collection, and New Issues Press, which is the press that published One Tribe. And I'm so excited because this fall I have a new book coming out, a novel, Angel de la Luna and the Fifth Glorious Mystery. And it's being marketed as a YA novel, even though I did not write it that way. So we'll see how that goes.
Can you give us just a sneak preview? What's it about? A little teaser?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's pretty much about, it's funny how it's hitting all these notes that are out there politically right now. Angel is a young Filipina activist. She's like 14 when the story begins, and gets really involved there in the Philippines with the comfort women issue. And suddenly, as a teenager, when she's like really like doing her nationalist thing, gets taken to the United States, gets brought to the United States against her will to live the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about immigration. It's about you know, the comfort women, but it's really about this young woman's coming of age and her relationship with her mom. So in the end, it's a mother-daughter story.
Mm, beautiful. Wow. And that's coming out when?
It's coming out in November 2013. So I might read from that at the faculty reading.
Oh, that's great.
So people can get a little sneak preview. Great. And the details on the reading are going to be that it's Sunday, June 30th.
Seed Art Success, our fundraiser.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be in Oakland. And it's at 3 to 4:30 is the VIP reception. And then there's the bigger reading from 4:30 to 6:30. And Melissa, do you have the website for?
Yes, it's www.voicesatvona.org.
And so people need to get tickets, right?
Yes.
You
can buy it on brown paper tickets.
In advance, yes. And I heard that the VIP tickets are running low, so people might want to get out and get some of those.
Yeah, and especially since you get an intimate conversation with the authors, I would love that.
With Evelina.
<I'm you. laughs>
With Juno, with Elmas.
You know, it's really wonderful about those the special donor categories. They're actually named after great writers of color, you know, so that's kind of amazing.
Right. There's Akalis Bulusan. There's all these amazing writers.
Jordan Neil Hurston. Yeah. So you should check out the website and just even see how creative we're being by naming them by these great writers.
And there'll be food, too, where there'll be... Will there...
There's food, there's music, there's a silent auction. It's going to be great.
Wonderful. And can you give us the website one more time?
It's voicesatvona.org.
And if people want to go to VONA, what's the whole application process like? When do they apply?
They usually apply... You missed this cycle. It has to be next year, but mm-hmm. it's before... The conference is always in June.
Okay, and then the VONA in Miami, is that happening?
We will see.
We will see. It might.
We will see.
And if it happens, it will happen in...
January.
Okay, so people could check out the website and come on out, break it down, submit in poetry, fiction, nonfiction, all the genres.
Right.
Well, thank you.
I love Elmaz's workshop, the political content.
Exactly.
Right.
She mixes it up. She's like, I'm the poet, and I write a little nonfiction and fiction.
And
so,
theater. Yeah, she does everything.
She does it all, spins. So thank you, ladies, so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for inviting us to talk with you.
Absolutely. And you're tuned into Apex Express.